Hello, and welcome to Around It About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. Today, I'm speaking with Charles Frazier. He's the author of three novels, Nightwoods, which was published in 2011, 13 Moons, which was published in 2006, and Cold Mountain from 1997. Cold Mountain seemed to come out of nowhere, a tremendous bestseller that won a National Book Award and was adapted into an Academy Award-winning film starring Nicole Kidman, Jude Law, and Renee Zellweger. Now, there's a new adaptation ready to debut. Composer Jennifer Higdon and librettist Gene Shear have created it. It's Cold Mountain the Opera. So in this interview, we'll find out what Charles Frazier thinks of Cold Mountain the Opera. I'm speaking with Frazier in advance of his appearances at the 2015 Celebration of Southern Literature. The public is invited to the event, which used to be called the Conference on Southern Literature, and at least once in this interview, I mistakenly call it by the old name. It's coming up April 16th through the 18th in downtown Chattanooga. Thank you for talking with me today.
Glad to talk to you.
So your novel Cold Mountain is being transformed into an opera, and that's going to premiere August 1st at the Santa Fe Opera in New Mexico. Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Jennifer Higdon adapted it, and that name should be familiar to some people in Chattanooga right now because she was actually here in Chattanooga just a few weeks ago. The Chattanooga Symphony and Opera performed her violin concerto, and that performance actually took place in the Tivoli, the same place the Conference on Southern Literature is taking place. I think that's an interesting coincidence.
Yeah, well, you know, she grew up in Maryville, and you know, kind of as the crow flies, I grew up in Andrews, which is way west in North Carolina. I mean, it's so far west that we got our TV from Chattanooga. So as the crow flies, she grew up about maybe 50 miles from where I grew up.
Are you a big fan of opera? I know you're into a lot of different kinds of music, but what about opera?
That's not one of my areas of knowledge or experience in music. So this has been a fun process, which has been going on for at least 4 years, getting this opera written, you know, financed, all that stuff that she and other people at Santa Fe and Philadelphia have been doing. So I'm just learning about opera and enjoying watching the process move forward.
You've seen some previews of it. There was just a preview in New York. What can you tell us about the opera? I mean, particularly the Appalachian influences. Can you really hear any of that in the music, the particular region that it's set in?
There are little bits and echoes of old-time Southern Appalachian music that you hear occasionally in it. Not a great deal, but I think they're actually going to do one of the singers can play the fiddle, and I think he's going to be playing the fiddle, you know, live on stage as he's performing in a couple of scenes.
The movie was, of course, a tremendous success. What do you think of the opera so far? Are you pretty much happy with it?
Well, yeah, I mean, the music is really powerful and very strong music, and the performers, it's an incredible cast with Isabel Leonard, who has been singing all over the world lately and at the Met and everywhere as Ada, and she looks like Ada just stepped off the page. Mason Gunn and Jay Hunter Morris, who has recently had a real explosion of his career.
Higdon, in interviews, has said that because she grew up in East Tennessee in this area, she really did feel an affinity for the characters like Inman, and that something she said, when I grew up, people were still talking about the Civil War. When you grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, what was the Civil War? Was it something that people were still actually talking about, or was it more just a thing in history books that was kind of completely done with?
Well, the older people I knew when I was a kid were very much 19th century people. My father's father was born in either 1879 or 1882. There are two different sets of documents on him. So he grew up during the Reconstruction and had very strong feelings about North and South, the war, those kinds of things.
What kind of influence did that have on you in terms of writing about the Civil War? Did that inspire you to set your first novel during that time period?
Well, it had hearing older people talk about the war and the aftermath of the war and the things that they had heard firsthand from Civil War veterans, hearing that as a child, it had this very mythic feel to it. I mean, the way I received it was as storytelling. So it always felt more like story than history to me, you know, malleable and subject to interpretation and all that. So I guess maybe I developed an attitude toward the war from hearing those older people talk about it.
In the book, the attitude of Inman is, you know, very much he's abandoning the war and he no longer understands what the South, or the average Southerner anyway, is fighting for. Was that kind of the sense that you got growing up, that there were a lot of people saying, why did we take part in this?
I think so. I mean, I think the consequences of that, of that war that should never have happened, the South lived with for decades upon decades. And I think for a lot of those people that grew up in the aftermath of it, the cost seemed high and regrettable.
That's Charles Frazier. We'll have more in a minute.
Support comes from Diamond Billiard Club, featuring 8 steel tip and 3 soft tip dart boards and a full menu until 2 a.m. 7 days a week. 3600 Hicks and Pike. More information at diamondbilliardclub.com.
WUTC listeners know the importance of investments. Make a wise investment for your company by investing in WUTC listeners as your customers. Become a WUTC program sponsor through underwriting. Call Ken Dryden at 423-425-4364 for more information.
You're listening to A Roundabout. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with author Charles Frazier. Here's more of the conversation. So for your follow-up to Cold Mountain, your second novel, which came out in 2007, it's called 13 Moons. It's about Cherokees and the Trail of Tears and tensions between Cherokees and white settlers. And it's written from the point of view of a man who, when he was a boy, the Cherokees adopted him, even though he was white. How aware were you of Cherokee history growing up in North Carolina?
Well, the little town where I grew up was maybe 30 miles, 35 miles from the Puyallup boundary, the home of the Eastern Band of the Cherokee. And it was closer than that to Snowbird, which is the community, the Cherokee community that is the most traditional. I mean, when I was growing up, there were people in Snowbird who didn't speak English. So I was always aware of the Cherokee. I didn't grow up, you know, living close enough to, as a boy, to know Cherokee people. It's one of the wonderful things about 13 Moons for me personally is getting to know a lot of people over in Cherokee.
It's actually been translated into Cherokee. How did that come about?
As the book was just about to come out, I wanted to get a sense of what the reaction of people in Cherokee would be to it, and sent out advance copies and just said, you know, if anybody wants to talk about this, I'll be at such and such a place having lunch on, you know, a particular day, and come by and let me know what you think. And out of that lunch, we talked a whole lot about language and the need to preserve the Cherokee. And out of that lunch, we ended up with a project to translate the middle section, the removal of the Cherokee, and that tries to cover how that small band of people were able to stay in their homeland instead of being moved out to Oklahoma. So Myrtle Driver did the translation, and it's in use in language programs there and in Oklahoma on the Cherokee Nation.
The main character, Will Cooper, is partly based on a real historical figure, William Holland Thomas, who's, it's said, is the only white chief of the Cherokee. Who was William Holland Thomas? What did he have to do with the Cherokees in North Carolina, some of them being able to stay instead of being forced to go off on the Trail of Tears?
Well, he had come there as a 12 or 13-year-old boy by himself to run a trading post there in what was then, I have a map from about that time that's white. You get much past Asheville and the map goes white. So he was out there running the trading post and got to know the Cherokee and to be, to feel very indebted to them. And over time, and he was not a great businessman in terms of managing money and real estate. He bought land using money that the Cherokee had, but sometimes he would put it in his name. Sometimes he would buy land with his money and put it in their name. And it was became a huge mess that eventually had to get straightened out. But the way they got to stay, this is a gross oversimplification, is that land was privately owned. So they got to keep what was owned, boiled down to deeds.
Because from what I understand, like, the federal government at the time didn't recognize the right of Native Americans to even own land, so you might need somebody like Thomas who is white to own that land, at least in name.
Right, yeah.
Why did you decide to not directly have William Holland Thomas be the protagonist? You say that he shares some DNA with your character, but they're not exactly the same person. Why create a fictional character instead of writing from the real man's point of view?
With me, the fiction is always the engineer on the train, and the history is doesn't have its hands on the controls. I'm more interested in the story and the characters, and felt that I'd taken enough liberties with his life to make a name change there.
That's Charles Frazier. We'll have more in a moment.
Do you own a business, or do you have an idea for a business, or maybe you're an investor looking to invest in a new business? Well, there's a show that you've got to listen to. I'm Monty Brule, and every Friday morning at 10 a.m. and again at 8 p.m., I'll be hosting Start It Up. Come on, get aboard the entrepreneurial train. Chattanooga has a lot going on. And remember, if you're gonna be a bear, be a grizzly. Come on.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Charles Frazier. He's the author of three novels, Nightwoods, 13 Moons, and Cold Mountain. Many writers are told, don't quit your day job. You're probably never going to make a living writing fiction. But Charles Frazier did quit his teaching job when he was working on Cold Mountain, his first novel. He'd never published a novel before, and he had no idea if it was going to be successful, so quitting his job was something of a gamble. Coming up in the interview, we'll find out what convinced him to do that. And obviously the gamble paid off. The novel won a National Book Award, and the film version was directed by Anthony Minghella, who was a prominent director who'd already received 12 Oscar nominations for his 1996 film The English Patient. Cold Mountain received 7 Academy Award nominations. Here's more of my conversation with Charles Frazier. When you wrote Cold Mountain, you actually kind of quit your job and spent several years writing it. How do you convince your wife that I haven't been published yet, but I really think this is the right thing to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, she more convinced me, I think. Our friend Kay Gibbons had said Catherine was a professor, and I was a lecturer, and was the sort of the main carpool parent, the one who, when there was a field trip, I'd volunteer to drive a load full of kids down to a museum in Raleigh or whatever. And Kay said, you know, you're doing three jobs. You're trying to write a book. You're the main daily parent, and you're teaching, and you can do two of those. So you need to pick two. And we talked about that a lot and decided to give it a couple of years when I could concentrate a lot of attention on finishing the book.
What were your expectations for it? Because you were definitely gambling a lot on it. Did you have any idea it was going to win a National Book Award and be the huge bestseller it became?
When I was in New York last week, I was talking with my editor and publisher at Grove, and we were kind of reminiscing about some of that and trying to remember the, you know, what we were all thinking at the time, pre-publication. And I said, my biggest hope was that I would get a better teaching schedule out of having the book published.
The second book, of course, the press wrote all about the $8 million advance that you got for the second book, and there was a lot of pressure for a successful follow-up. How did that affect your writing, having that much pressure on your shoulders at that point?
I think I was, just in terms of myself and the day-to-day work on that book, I was pretty good at just leaving all that outside the office door.
You just concentrate on the story and the characters and try to lose yourself in that world so much, maybe?
Yeah. I remember when Anthony Minghella got in touch with me to talk about buying the film rights for Cold Mountain. The first thing he said, and this was a few weeks after his movie had won 9 Academy Awards, he said, "Charles, the only thing I can promise you if I make a movie out of your book is that it will not be as successful as The English Patient." I thought that was such an honest thing to say. It was just like, yeah, you can have it. Make a movie.
The soundtrack to Cold Mountain, three of the songs were nominated for Academy Awards. Did you have any hand in picking the music for the film?
Anthony Minghella didn't know anything about old-time music, and so when we first started talking about the movie, I was sending him, you know, CDs, every little bit. I'd send him a few CDs of stuff I liked the best, the stuff I listened to the most while I was working on Cold Mountain, some of those really early Doc Watson and Family records that have his father-in-law singing old ballads, that sort of thing. So he liked a lot of that and thought it had some, had a place in the movie. Shake note singing, for example, plays a part in a really crucial scene in the movie.
When you're writing, what is your process like? Are you the kind of writer who does a lot of research and then writes the story, or do you try to get the story right first and then fill in the historical details later on?
I do enough research to get going with the writing, and then they're happening at the same time from that point on. I mean, right now I'm working on a book based on Verena Howell Davis, Jefferson Davis's wife, really fascinating, bright, witty woman who knew loads of interesting people. So right now I'm doing sort of half my time, it's kind of early in writing the book, half my time researching, half my time writing. I hope 9 months from now it'll be more like 80% writing and 20% research.
Davis is, of course, not very well-respected among a lot of people, and some people blame him for the South losing the Civil War. What made you want to write about his wife specifically?
She was, well, the thing that made me want to write about her was one of the first things I read about her, that pretty quickly after his death, she packed up, moved to New York City, lived in a residential hotel just off of Times Square, which I just went to a couple of days ago, still there, and made her living writing for newspapers in New York. And she was heavily criticized in the Southern press. And her response was, you know, I'm whatever she was, 62 years old. I can live where I want. And I was fascinated. She became friends with Ulysses S. Grant's widow.
Oh, wow.
Which also didn't sit really well in the South.
I would imagine, yeah.
So I thought, there's an interesting character there. And the more I read, the more I liked her and the circle of friends. She had several women friends who wrote books and, you know, these very smart women whose intelligence and talent had to be filtered through their husbands because of the nature of the culture at the time.
The most recent book I've read about Davis is James McPherson's book, Embattled Rebel, and in that, she really seemed like a strong figure. She was kind of helping him get through some of the tough times and even taking charge at certain points, it seems like.
Yeah, even when, there was a considerable age difference between the two. And even early on in their marriage, when he first decided to run for office, she was heavily involved in his speeches, in helping him write them, edit them, all that. And she was very well educated. Her grandfather was a 3-term governor of New Jersey, and had lots of northern connections. My favorite element so far is that after the war, Oscar Wilde came to their house for dinner on one of his U.S. tours. That'll be a fun scene to write.
Do you have a title for the book yet?
No, I don't.
Do you have any timetable as to when you plan to have it published?
Oh, I've got a deadline 2 years from now, and I held too many students' feet to the fire over deadlines to take them cavalierly.
You'll be here for the Celebration of Southern Literature April 16th through 18th, and you're a member of the Fellowship of Southern Writers. What do you get out of coming to these celebrations? I mean, just as a reader, as a participant, I really enjoy the panel discussions, but what do the writers get out of being here?
Well, it has such a wonderful atmosphere. And I just love seeing writers in that kind of relaxed atmosphere that you don't run into all the time. And it's just a great chance to catch up with friends, meet some new people. It's a thoroughly enjoyable weekend.
Well, Charles Frazier, thank you so much for talking with us today. Is there anything else you want to say?
Oh, thanks for having me.
The 2015 Celebration of Southern Literature is going to take place April 16th through the 18th. More than 40 writers will participate in discussion panels, autograph sessions, and other events. The public is invited. Tickets, the full schedule, and more information can be found at southernlitalliance.org. That's southernlitalliance.org. I'm Michael Edward Miller, and this has been Around It About.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.